What are some of the things that that interested you this week? For me, I'm just going to say this. There was this tweet going around discussing funding in local startups. And I think something that came out really, really well was the fact that we still don't have a lot of money going to local funders. And I remember I think in the year that we were discussing, which is, it was 2020, no, actually it was in 2019, startups in Kenya, we only had one startup by a local founder that raised above $1 million compared to, 11 startups, or rather 11 foreign founders raising over $1 million USD in 2019. And this is compared to
2019.
This is 2019. Okay. Sorry. In Nigeria, we had around 12 local founders who raised above $1 million. And we only had 5 foreign founders. In South Africa, it was 14 local founders, 4 foreign founders. And this, you know what? This kind of points to the argument that we were having earlier, which is that, let's just say this up straight. There could be more money flowing to local founders. It's not.
That's very sad. It just hit me. Does it mean that local founders... Anyway, guys, this is a bit curious.
So if you're new here, what we do is we get to talk about tech and policy, and it's a Friday evening podcast, so let's just say that we're slightly more informal and more opinionated compared to our other podcasts.
Yeah, very interesting, guys, and welcome to the show. Ali, I think for me, really, what stood up for me, first of all, definitely markets. We have to talk about that. My main stuff that stood up for me, first of all, was Zomato IPO. I know I've really talked about Zomato, starting off from the his and his letters, and also giving guys a lot more insights during Zomato's IPO. Zomato is really an interesting company, Ali, considering that some of the world's greatest investors, and I know we're going to talk about that in a few, have actually said that Zomato's IPO is, I'd say, a blockbuster.
Why? Apart from the fact that Zomato rhymes with tomato.
Yeah, like Zomato tomato. So guys, in case you're wondering, tomato, we also have Zomato.
Zomato.
Zomato. So
back to the IPO.
Ali, this is one of the highest, most anticipated IPOs, I think, in India. And so that's really, really one thing as well that's coming in for me personally. Zomato, really, for those of you who might still be wondering what Zomato is. Zomato is an Indian company, and they made their listing at 126. What's it? It's called an Indian rupee.
Yes.
Yeah, at 126 Indian rupee, and jumped all the way to 138 Indian rupees by the time of closing. So Zomato actually hit the circuit breaker for the ceiling for trading on its initial trading day on India's stock markets. That's the Bombay Stock Exchange, which they're listing in. Zomato really comes in because it's typically just, how do you put it? Can you say it's just like any other local company? And Ali, if you checked onto the HISA newsletter, from a company that was making purely less than 100 million in terms of sales, going all the way up to 2 billion within one financial year,
mm-hmm.
It comes in as a very important aspect for Zomato, and that's one thing that really, really, personally for me, really stood out for me this week. And also another thing that I think stood out for me, and those things that you see happening to your neighbor and you wish they would happen to you, you're probably seeing your neighbor having a lawnmower and you'd want to own one so that your grass could be in the same level.
Right.
It's very sad. You know, I was looking at the listings that will happen across US markets, and Ali, this week alone, that's New York Stock Exchange, NASDAQ, they had 16 listings happening this week. Can you imagine?
How many listings have we had on the NSE this year?
Last year we had Homeboys, which we're still waiting for the shares so that we can take them down right where they belong, you know.
Speak for yourself.
Okay, personally for me, I'm waiting for Homeboys. I won't buy it, to be honest. Guys are waiting for Homeboys. Maybe I'm not waiting for Homeboys, you know. Ali, this is the reality. The fundamentals for the company, guys will definitely do the analysis. I don't want to do that. We've actually had a talk on Homeboys in the past,
mm-hmm.
right? But then if you want to buy Homeboys so that you can be able to rally the shares down, shame on you. Because every investor, why would you buy a share so that you can be able to dump them? Every investor has the principles, which is to make money. It's the number one principle every investor has to make. So why are you buying Homeboys if you want the share price to go down? Anyway, we are waiting. The NSE said that the shares for Homeboys will be available for trading, I think, at Q3, when Homeboys listed last year in December. So we're still waiting for Homeboys to the share prices to come. But I'm personally waiting just to view onto what level Homeboys would be able to probably perform over time, even as we look onto the long-term effect of that on the NSE. But come on, guys, we need more listings. We can't be having markets out here getting 16. And Ali, next week as well, the US markets also have other 16 listings again. Come on, African markets, what's really happening?
I mean, that really brings the proverbial amatukonchi ingine.
Yeah. And then you see, it's very funny that smaller markets like Rwanda are getting more listings. Over the past like 2 years, Rwanda has had more listings than the NSE has had listings. Because we had the South African cement company, that's RH Bofello, actually list on RSE. And then earlier this year, we also had MTN Lonsdale.
Right.
Listing. And if you look at the annual returns for MTN Lonsdale in terms of investor performance, it's actually really come in handy. I think guys in Rwanda just needed something to actually activate activate the type of activity that guys would actually hope for,
right?
Standing out fairly stable though. However, good communication as well, guys. One positive side of all this is, you know, Nairobi Business Ventures still holds the record as the top the highest return for stocks in Africa this year. In terms of year-to-date returns, NBV still holds that, because NBV has actually given guys, let me just see, the one-year return, NBV has given guys 1,531%. Ooh. The closest that is in Africa is Non-Life Insurance Company, Lasako Assurance PLC, which is a Nigerian company, and has given guys 540% in terms of return. And then, here's something to you guys. Kenya Airways, that is listed on the Ugandan Securities Exchange, is the third in terms of investor shareholder performance in Africa. Ali, can you imagine KQ has given guys who bought KQ year-to-date returns in the Ugandan Stock Exchange 286% in terms of return?
Wow. What's driving the rally in Uganda? What's driving its performance? Because, I mean, charity begins at home, but then, Felix, KQ is not doing as well at home.
I don't know about KQ. And I believe that KQ, I think the data that you're getting is before KQ was suspended from trading. And we just have to get a little bit of a hold on to that bit.
Speaking on the... On the markets, Felix. There was this news last week. I know we didn't host We Are Curious last week, so we get to talk about it right now. It was dated July 14th that NSE is planning to introduce day trading in October. What do you have to say about that?
Ali, oh my God. Okay. So now, guys, for those of you who don't understand what day trading really means, day trading, there are two aspects of day trading. The first one is you can be able to trade your shares within the same day. You can be able to buy and sell within the same day.
Mm-hmm.
Also, another thing with day trading, and what I think the NSE is planning to do, what they call day trading, is a T+1 model, where you can be able to buy your shares today and then they'll be able to settle tomorrow, which literally is what happens. Even in the day trading that you trade within the same day, some of the things that usually happen is the net settlement of the price, the share price at which you're taking, happens the next day, you know.
Right.
You're trading today, you buy and sell, the next settlement, which is done at zero,
mm-hmm.
for you, will be the next trading day, which is, if you trade on a Friday, it will be on a Monday. I think one of the things that this is likely to do in, and I think we had mentioned this early, some time back, that even if the NSE introduces day trading, that is not really a big problem. You know, the main problem which investors really have on this market, it's not about the number of companies which are listed on the exchange or the type of trading settlement that we have, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Those are minor problems and minor issues that guys would really have. The main challenge which we all have with the NSE, and speaking from an investor standpoint, that is for me personally, I think the main challenge which we really have is, how blindly can I put it, you know? I think we have the challenge of, I don't want to call it insider trading. I'm looking at, I'd say, a lot of market front running activities, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The investor confidence, that is what the NSE needs to build. Even the small companies that we have that are listed on the exchange, is there a way that we can be able to ensure that this company is really turn positive, you know? Can you imagine, out of the total number of companies listed on the exchange, guys are constantly looking to five companies. We have 62 listed companies on the exchange, Ali, and everybody's always looking at, most investors, not everybody, definitely, we still have guys buying Uchumi, for starters, or Home Africa like me.
Mm-hmm.
But what really happens with guys, you know, we all buy, most of these penny stocks are bought for speculation. My main problem is, can we really develop investor confidence in the small number of companies we have? You've seen issues with companies that were blindly would have listed onto the exchange and brought shareholder losses to the NSE. We've seen companies like Nakumat, you know, that wanted to list on the exchange. We've seen companies like Tuskys, which is very recent, that wanted to list on the exchange and really had nothing. Maybe the most successful thing we've seen out of Ibuka has been Homeboys. The rest has actually just been, most of the rest, we're yet to see really the full impact of Ibuka, and Dennis is constantly admitting more companies onto Ibuka. But we really want to understand what's really happening in the other companies that are listed on the exchange. And these programs that the NSE is bringing in, they're really good for me. They're very good. And even for you as an investor, even for the exchange. Come on, you're a shareholder for the NSE. They're getting a lot in terms of transaction fees for all shares that are traded on the market. Definitely a good thing for you as well. But for investor activity, man, even if you bring in day trading, who's going to trade? Because the majority of the investors who are investing on the exchange, most of them are low, not so low, okay. Majority of the shareholding structure on most of these companies, retail investors hold quite a very small percentage. Are we going to still see fund managers taking up the day-to-day trading of the exchange? Of which I'm sure that's not likely, because fund managers always have a long-term outlook for the companies which they invest in. So what's the analysis? Can we have fractional trading of shares onto the exchange? Come on, let guys buy a quarter share of Jubilee. If I cannot be able to buy a whole 360, where Jubilee is trading at 385 or 400, where Kakuzi is. Why can't I get 40 shillings that's left in my CDSC account and trade fractional shares? Come on, I think for the past 1 week, I've had 60 shillings lying in my CDS account at my broker. So what's really happening? Yeah. So still, the day trading is good, but there's still a lot of more issues that would complement day trading. Day trading is just another complementary activity that's good. Can we really have more discussions around that? That's my opinion, guys. That does not necessarily reflect the opinion for Hisa and the team. That's my personal opinion, because I am curious. about day trading?
Felix, before we really get to
I felt like I was a preacher, you know.
Usually you are. Before we really get into the flesh of what we want to talk about, something interesting.
That was not the flesh.
It was supposed to be a trailer, but then usually, Felix, you're being yourself. Felix, our main story tonight. Oh my God, I feel like Trevor Noah. No, sorry, John Oliver. Uh-huh. So our main story tonight looks at three things. First of all, besides the funding for local founders that we've talked about, Felix, there's one thing that I really would like to, you know, delve into. And this is the Bank of Uganda taking over regulation of mobile money. For those who haven't heard, of the news, of course, this happened, it happened last week. We didn't have Wikira, so we get to talk about it. And just give me a moment. I need to get you the details. I specifically want to talk about this because it's a conversation that we've had here locally. Yeah. And some of the details that we report at the Kenyan Wall Street was that the Bank of Uganda has completely taken over the regulation of money services from the telecommunications regulator, which is the Uganda Communications Commission. And some of the things that we have seen that have come with, you know, that measure is that the Bank of Uganda has licensed firms to undertake mobile money under some of the new rules in this change, yeah? And in the new licenses given by the Bank of Uganda, some of the beneficiaries were Airtel Mobile Commerce Uganda. Of course, we had MTN Mobile Money and MS Transfer Limited. Of course, we had other players applying for the licenses, but then that's still something that's developing. And I remember something that came out of the discussion also was some of the fears by the customers. And one of the things that stood out was that many people in Uganda were afraid that the new changes could affect, you know, the safety of cash, maybe compromise here and there on the quality of services, and also maybe affect the cost of transferring money, you know, withdrawing and sort of depositing. We still had, of course, as usual, companies that are playing in the space came with the promises that they usually make with Airtel Money, saying they will maintain the same level of protection and comply with Uganda's privacy. But what do you think, Felix? And again, this is not a conversation that Kenya has thought about. Taking over of M-Pesa, or rather treating M-Pesa as a bank.
Well, first of all, Ali, first of all, to give guys a little bit of the numbers, why we're seeing this. Mobile money transactions in Uganda are, by the third quarter of 2020, stood at $8.2 billion, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. For comparing that to Uganda's budget, it's a joke. So the Uganda's Central Bank of Uganda, I think they call them Bank of Uganda.
Yes.
Yeah, my peeps, my friends in Uganda. I love Uganda. Come on. So I feel like I always hit on Uganda. One of the things that we really have to look into, first of all, is the value of transactions.
Mm-hmm.
And also Central Bank has really bring in a lot of regulation. The first thing is they're encouraging the service providers, now they're seen as mobile money providers, you know,
mm-hmm.
to bring in more financial incentives so that guys can actually see them, the mobile money service more as a financial service compared to what guys recently saw them for. And the first one is, one of the things that Bank of Uganda is encouraging the mobile money operators to really give is, an example is interest. Mm-hmm. Money lying in your account, you know, should definitely earn you something, which it's a good incentive. Come on, how Ali, that definitely.
When you say money lying in your account, you mean money lying in your mobile money account?
Yeah.
So my
yeah,
if you were in Kenya, this would be my M float.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
M-Pesa float. But then we're also seeing that happening with a few, I think with M-Pesa, just to talk about M-Pesa, where you have stuff like Mshwari locked savings account, and you can be able to
earn interest.
Yeah, to earn interest. But then also guys should understand that there's a little bit of a difference between Mshwari product and the M-Pesa product,
mm-hmm.
though one is embedded in the other. One of the things as well that the company is really trying to, that the Bank of Uganda is trying to do is to do, I think, what they call mobile money, because Bank of Uganda had said that mobile money is being used now. I think we've had this issue as well with Kenya. Mobile money is being used to fund illegal activities. Like, come on, mobile money has one of the, I think in Kenya it has one of the strongest ledgers. I don't know, but if somebody wanted to track mobile money transfers, they would do that all the way to the first.
That would be very easy.
Yeah, come on, guys are talking about Bitcoin in Uganda, still talking about mobile money. Anyway, I don't want to hit on Uganda today once again. These are my friends. I have very good friends in Uganda, and I don't want to hit on them again. Ali, there's a report that actually came out that close to 2.2 million accounts were cleaned off the mobile money networks within 3 months. That is after Bank of Uganda issued that directive to transfer money from, so a little bit true for them.
Right.
Because you're seeing 2.2 million mobile money accounts. It's like you've just, can you imagine if 2.2 million people were swept off with some floods, or some aliens came in and picked some 2.2 million people to another planet? We definitely noticed that, right?
Right.
But in Uganda, 2.2 million accounts, and my next concern really would be on to what measures Bank of Uganda is going to take on trailing some of these mobile money accounts. But now it's also being a tougher aspect as well for telecommunication companies, because right now they have to engage into another service which was not really their bit, because initially what they were doing is to, just the same way we're seeing that in Kenya, where M-Pesa is just a platform, and then other companies or other financial services would come in and embed their product with the platform so that they can offer a fully activated financial product.
Mm-hmm.
So still a little bit of a challenge for me, because now it would mean that these other companies would also want to, these other companies would be forced to also just, how do you put it? They would be forced to do their own different financial reporting as well.
My question would be,
but then also, Ali, just to cut you off, we've seen that today there's actually news that Vodafone CEO has actually hinted at spinning off mobile money platform M-Pesa. That's here for Kenya.
Again?
Yeah.
Really, go deeper into that.
The Vodafone Group CEO has said that they will likely, let me read the statement. It says, Vodacom Chief Executive Officer, Nick Ray, said it's logical to keep M-Pesa within the telecommunications group for now to maintain benefits like distribution and cement customer loyalty. In the future, however, there may be opportunities to scale further. Something like that. At that point, I think we would make the decision as to whether we would want to do anything inorganically, like spin off the company to its own subsidiary. So, yeah.
I think my question here would before we get into this Vodafone mess up, let me walk back kidogo. What would be the implication on the costs of mobile money providers in Uganda if they start paying interest for mobile money float?
I think, Ali, we're likely going to see, I think the transactions might be raised or lowered to match the banking system.
Raised or lowered to mean?
Yeah, like, for starters, I don't know what banks in Uganda charge for transactions.
Mm-hmm.
So if the mobile money was lower or was higher, really one way or another, they might really need to just find a new balance, a new level.
What is likely to come?
Definitely lower. Because they're now going to be competing with financial services firms, you know, fully fledged companies, fully fledged banks. actively. Yeah. But also we know, we know some of the banks in Uganda are actually Kenyan banks.
I think
I do want to press on that, like, but for my guys in Uganda, yeah, some of the banks there. Oh yeah, and we saw I&M the other day complete the acquisition of Uganda's Orient Bank.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think I'd be interested if just let's think hypothetically, like I'd be interested in the reception in Kenya of, you know, similar ideas. Like, how would Kenyans look at, you know, the prospect of potentially earning interest from their M-Pesa balance? Not that we usually
I think maybe also just to get it right, you see,
mm-hmm.
one of the things that Uganda, well, Bank of Uganda encouraged the mobile money providers to really give guys more incentives, like interest on their deposits.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, even financial banks, retail banks do not give you interest on money that is just lying on any account, you know.
Right.
So I think one of the things that mobile money service providers in Uganda will have to really look at is, what types of accounts do they have to set up for guys? Will we see savings products like M-Shuri, for example? Would they partner with a few banks in Uganda just to give guys that incentive? Because, you know, interest, and one of the things that people don't know is that the interest that you get on your account, Ali,
mm-hmm.
it's not interest that is lying somewhere. The bank is just going to give you interest. When you lock it, for example, if it's in a locked savings account, you're giving the bank an opportunity
to sort of use that money to say lend and then earn.
Yeah, exactly. They're sure that in the next 3 months, if you lock it for 1 year, they know in the next 12 months, they can be able to use this money in whatever way that they can be able to use it from. And then at the end of those 12 months,
mm-hmm.
then they'll be able to get some interest and then they'll pay a little bit of that.
Right.
So those are some of the things. I don't think it will get to a point where banks have to just pay off guys, you know, you have 100 shillings in your account and the next day you're seeing it's 101.
Of course.
Yeah.
So sort of, so mobile money providers would have to find ways to creatively partner with other members of the financial services just to fit into that regulation basket.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Just maybe locally, in case you haven't caught up with what's happening in the Kenyan mobile money space, we had a report that came out recently that, well, CBK data, of course, the value of mobile money transactions in the first 5 months of 2021 rose up by 56%. Shockingly, this is January to May in 2021, the value of mobile money transactions rose by 56% compared to same time last year, where we had sort of waivers on mobile money transactions. I find this rather interesting. So in May 2021, mobile money payments reached around Kenyan shillings 537 billion, which is around $4.9 billion, up from 357 billion in May 2020. Kenyans transacted an average of shillings 18 billion on their mobile phones daily between January and May 2021, and which is up from around 12 billion shillings daily in the same time in 2020. And I think CBK said that one of the things that drove the increase in value of transactions was mostly e-commerce, which became even a bigger thing given COVID-19.
Guys have money. That's all I can say. I think, you know, it looks like we really, first of all, I think the economy is growing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also interesting just to see a lot of adoption in terms of mobile money use for our country. Yeah, like 56% increase in mobile money transactions, 2.7 trillion moving across just your mobile phone and my mobile phone. I don't know how much of the 2.7 trillion you account for. I think if we started tapping mobile money, a few taxes on mobile money, guys.
Don't give them ideas, come on.
We can actually pay some of these debts off. You guys have money.
First of all, don't give them ideas. Second, I feel like we have to check how much of that money that is flowing around is already coming from.
And then Ali, you know, one of the most interesting things is in the first month of 2021,
mm-hmm.
the mobile money transactions actually hit 1 trillion. So in 2 months alone, we were at, so yes, we had 2.7 trillion, but in 2 months alone, in January and February, we actually managed to move in 1 trillion. So, and this was like also another 50% higher, because in the previous year,
mm-hmm.
We had 568 billion. So really, really looking weird in one way or another. So still, I don't know, but I think one of the incentives that guys are really looking at, just to undo this analysis from a local standpoint,
mm-hmm.
what guys are doing is guys are moving more money from various accounts, mostly from banks which are charging rates, to transfer from a bank to bank. So it's not guys doing, you know, you deposit from your account to your M-Pesa for
creative
free.
Transfers.
Yeah, creative transfer actually. And I think we were having this discussion a while ago, where you'd rather move money from your bank account to an M-Pesa, and then from your M-Pesa to the recipient's bank account.
I think
for free,
mm-hmm.
at zero. And then at the same time, rather than sending from M-Pesa to M-Pesa, and then also rather than also sending money from bank to bank, which all of this will be charged.
Yeah, I think it's the same way, but we have guys moving money from their M-Pesa to their bank and then to another M-Pesa, so sort of
using
banks as a pivot to run away from transaction charges. Yeah, I really hope that's
not
the case.
And then also with this, if you didn't know this idea, we've given you a new idea. So yeah, your curiosity that brought you here today has gotten you with something.
Right. You know, once we start talking about mobile money, you know, there's a whole larger data ecosystem, Felix. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, as you said earlier, transfers on digital platforms, especially mobile money, come with, you know, the data of the customers. And speaking of data, we had a report by Business Daily earlier in the week showing that at least 41% of companies in Kenya shared their clients' data without their consent. And guys, this is a topic that I have been following up passionately this week, because I hosted a podcast with Andrew Bond, who is the regional manager for Zoho for Africa, and we were discussing just the amount of data that is being shared without your consent, and generally what regulation or what governments in Africa can do to make sure that whatever data is shared about you, you've already consented to the sharing, rather than companies sharing your data or you being bound by some funny fintech startup that's lending to people on your Safaricom line and then you have to opt out. Also, other ways in which companies can, you know, instead of getting data from other data points, because it's common knowledge that data is sold around the ecosystem, Felix.
It shouldn't be common knowledge, man.
But it shouldn't be, but it is. So what are some of the other tools that companies can use to make sure that they can reach their customers effectively, they can understand how they consume their products without necessarily, you know, having pertinent information, which a customer A would not be willing to share. B, a customer is exposed in case maybe a system is exposed to a hack or something.
Ali, personally for me, I haven't really gone through the report by Ernst & Young. Mm-hmm. I think they're the ones who did the report, but one of the things that I got from just reading through, I think I've read through the reference by Business Daily,
mm-hmm.
and Ali, can you imagine 53% of companies are sharing data without your approval? You know, 41% of firms actually transferred your client to third party, the client information to third party providers.
Yeah, that's like one in every two.
Yeah, because that means, let me just explain to guys in a nutshell, this is what it means. It means, an example is, you bought your airtime through Safaricom, and I know guys were complaining a lot with this, where you're buying your airtime on Safaricom, and then a few minutes later, after the M-Pesa message, or you send somebody M-Pesa,
mm-hmm.
you have like 10 or so guys really texting you, do this. I don't know. There were those promotional messages, but then Ali, I think with the data law, the data protection law is yet to, it started taking effect. We've seen, we already have now a data protection officer. That's a name, right? That's a designation.
Yeah.
We're yet to really see the full impact, because guys were even talking about the other day when you see, when a lot of guys were having various inquiries about political party affiliation, where you find yourself registered to Uganda's People's Party. Okay. Yeah, and yet you're here in Kenya. So I know that was a challenge that guys were having. I think also it's about Kenyans knowing the rights that they have. In reference to data, you know, data is the new gold. And somebody with your data can be able to do a lot just with that information. Guys can actually figure out, let me give guys how risky your data is. If somebody were to get your M-Pesa data, then they can easily know which mama mboga you probably buy your mboga from, who's your landlord, you know, or which account do you pay your rent to, or how much you pay your rent to, which eatery do you go out to, you know, which place do you usually hang out most, and what times are there. So your whole data that somebody would get from you, just from M-Pesa, this is just something I'm giving you guys from M-Pesa. Now you'd imagine how much they can be able to get if they were to go to, say, your bank, for example. And the report by Ernst & Young actually says that this includes banks, fund managers, you know.
Right.
Having to share out your information out there without you being in the know. You'd imagine if your fund manager, for example, for those of you who've invested in money markets, if fund manager was to, your asset manager was to share this, your certain information with, say, just let me give a bold example, and I'd use something, a company that most of us are used to, and this is just an example, guys. Let's say an example is you're investing in CIC money market, and CIC to some extent is a subsidiary of Cooperative Bank. So you'd find Ali, you're investing here with CIC, and then CoopBank at the same time has the same information. So there's not the Chinese wall between these two companies. But I'm not saying that's the case, guys. Just a disclaimer, that's just an example. So you'd imagine CoopBank can easily analyze. If you wanted to go and get some services from CoopBank, they can easily analyze what kind of investor are you, what kind of assets do you have in the CIC pops out on this end. But that's just an example. I'm not saying that Cooperative Bank and CIC do that. So that's totally an example that I'm giving you guys on the risk that we have if your data out there is to be used by, because even in that simple case, you've given your data to CIC, but then you end up getting it in Cooperative Bank. Or we've seen places where you want to register for a service. The moment you key in, somebody tells you, what's your ID number? They tell you, oh, we can easily get your data from XYZ. So such things, such a challenge is that we need to be wary about.
But then, Felix, there's a good side to this. I'm not saying there's a good side to companies sharing your data without your consent. Just get that clear.
It feels like that's what
we're No. The argument here, my argument here is, we already have a national database, by the way, that we already have a national database that institutions like banks can just key in your ID number and get a lot of information about you.
That's IPRS.
I'm not really, really familiar with the name.
Yeah.
What I'm saying here is, I think we should just have, you know, a common pool like IPRS where actually, it's well written that this is the data that we hold about you. These are the people who we can give access under these sets of circumstances, you know. But then companies sharing their data across, your data across, is what is the problem here.
Even CRB is sharing your information to another registrar. I don't think that's good, you know, where you're finding your details are here with TransUnion, and then also at the same time there with, what's the other CRB?
I think it's Metropole.
Metropole. Yeah, which is the most famous one. I think, you know, I think, yeah, even that is actually legal, guys. So it's upon the company to initially just push all this through. But I think IPRS, which is it's a government database, Ali.
Mm-hmm.
I think your data within IPRS are actually safe, because whatever the banks usually get when they key in your ID number, it's usually just your picture and the serial number.
So it's just verification of your identity.
Yeah, it's technically just for verification purposes. They only get your picture, your passport photo, and your ID and your serial number, so that if you present an ID that was lost some years back, you know, you can't be able to get the same service.
Felix, maybe something that one of the last things that we can discuss today before we end this discussion is something I know you're very, very passionate about. And just before we get there, just an update for you guys. CBK released inflation data for January to March 2021. Inflation rose by 5.8% in Q1 2021 compared to 5.3%. Well, rose to 5.8%, sorry, compared to 5.3% in 2020. Fuel inflation increased to 13.9% from 11.5% in Q4. And food inflation increased to 7% from 6.3%. But then, of course, the increase in cost is not something that's new to Kenyans. I'm sure we're used to it, so we'll just gloss over that. Felix, what I wanted us to talk about was the cryptocurrency conference. I don't know whether or not you followed that. And one of the famous statements that came out of that discussion is what Elon Musk said. Let me do this. I might pump, but I do not dump. Felix.
First of all, guys, Elon actually confirmed that he owns.
He owns a portfolio of Ether, Dogecoin, and Bitcoin.
Yeah, and I think we saw a little bit of a rally onto that bit. It was a very interesting session. Also considering that we got a little bit of a first time outlook from Cathie Wood.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was just talking about the future of Bitcoin. And it looks interesting where we're having guys like Cathie Wood actually say they have a little bit of faith in Bitcoin.
Wait.
But and guys, in case you don't know Cathie Wood, please just Google Cathie Wood. I think it should be very challenging for me to start describing.
No. But let's just have an honest discussion. First of all, me, I feel like, again, this whatever I say after this does not represent my opinions on cryptocurrency. But then me, I feel like the panel was biased. Come on, you're putting Jack Dorsey, Twitter CEO, also Square CEO. The guys were developing. A hardware platform for crypto, right? And then next to Jack, you're putting who? Elon Musk, the father of Dogecoin, at least on Twitter. And then you're bringing Cathie Wood, who is a founder and CEO of ARK Invest, an investment management firm that has been known to be pro-crypto. What did you expect here? This is biased to begin with. So they're definitely going to speak about they were definitely going to be bullish on cryptocurrency. So that's not news, Nani Felix.
Ali, how did you want them to have it? Did you want them to have more other guys against crypto?
No, I wanted them to have an objective discussion of cryptocurrency. And just by having the three of them, that's improbable.
First of all, Ali, the talk was actually on Bitcoin. The talk was themed as future of Bitcoin, you know?
Right?
And one of the things that really stood out for me was Dorsey, who came in and said his main hope is that his main hope is that Bitcoin would create a world full of peace for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we've seen central banks actually saying Bitcoin is being used out here to perform a lot of illegal activities. So
is hard cash, what's the point?
So it's still a little bit of a challenge. I know one of the things that have really come in has been the intrinsic value of Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
And also just to what level, you know, if we still have the hard cash, Ali, and yet we still don't have a single global currency. We're seeing banks coming up here with various central bank digital currencies. A few banks, at least globally, you know, our central bank is not in that list. But we're seeing a lot of banks coming up with central bank digital currencies, and we're also seeing other mini currencies like Dogecoin, for example, popping out of nowhere. So what everybody is usually trying to ask is there a way, you know, if you want to decentralize finance, then you also have to ensure that you have a single currency which everybody is going to accept in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
Ali, I don't know about you, but why do we have Bitcoin? And this is a question that that I know, I think, what's his name? There's another guy, not Kathy Wood. There were four guys who said that his main concern has really been over it. Was that, is there a way that we can be able to ensure that we do not have one single currency pegged to Bitcoin? Where, because, you know, we can't continue, we need to figure out a level. We can't have an issue where you'd need 4 billion Uganda shillings to buy one Bitcoin.
Right.
And then at the same time, you only need maybe 30,000 US dollars. Why are we still using a special one single currency as the reference point of Bitcoin?
I think that's, and that's the thing, yeah? If we're using the USD as a reference point for...
Just hold on. Guys, you need 115 million, not 4 billion, 115,363,417 to buy Ugandan shilling, to buy one Bitcoin today. Oh my God.
Well, before you kill the hopes of Ugandans, please don't head out to other countries on how they can access cryptocurrency. I think, yes, basing the price of Bitcoin on currencies like the USD already leaves, you know, other countries miles behind, just from like a cost point of view.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that, like, when you just look at the fact that some of our debts are pegged in, you know, in fluctuating currencies, yeah. It's already a problem. So this is just like a transference of a problem that's already hurting us in many other ways.
So still, it stands in as a challenge, Ali. But the good thing also, I think, for me, is we're seeing Ether really bring in a little bit of resistance as compared to Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of guys really have a lot of trust in decentralization of Ether than Bitcoin. But these are things that I know definitely we'll be able to look into. The performance of these currencies have also affected companies, you know, like Coinbase, which listed the other day, about 2-3 months ago, when Coinbase listed, and now we're seeing the valuation of the price of Coinbase has really also declined on the NYSE.
I think before we go to talk about Ether and the whole ecosystem, there are two things that I think our listeners should not, that could have drove the uptick in Bitcoin price, which was said by Elon. First things first, Elon, in as much as he did not confirm this, he said that Tesla is most likely to start again accepting BTC as a means of payment in the future, but then they want to do a little bit more.
They said that last week. They said that two weeks ago. So investors are still hoping for a lot in terms of activity as well by Tesla.
Right.
Yeah, and not only Tesla, he actually confirmed that SpaceX also owns some BTC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, coming in as well, I know this is something that's good for me. Yeah. As somebody who loves space, guys, when we go to build our community in Mars, we would need a new currency, and we're probably thinking that would be crypto.
Yeah, and I think we also had an announcement by, was it MasterCard, that MasterCard will enhance its card program for crypto wallets and exchanges, which will sort of make it simpler for people with their cards to convert cryptocurrency to fiat currency. And I think that will sort of, it's just another step into improving that, you know, conversion. I think earlier they announced that they're also planning to allow people to purchase goods directly using crypto in their merchant stores, which is an insane number. I don't have the figures. I think I'll have to check that later.
Okay. Something interesting. And also one thing for guys who are listening is that in the coming week on Thursday, we have a very special event coming up on Thursday because Robinhood Markets is actually listing.
Robinhood Markets?
Yeah. The famous Robinhood.
Right. No, yeah. Why do I feel like, in my head, I thought it listed earlier.
No. So
it didn't.
No, not yet. So,
that was Coinbase.
Yeah, Coinbase had listed on the 29th, that's on Thursday next week. We will actually be hoping for Robinhood to bring in $35 billion in terms of valuation as it lists on the market. They're hoping to trade from $30 to $42 a share.
Right.
Within that day. And here's a few facts about Robinhood Markets. First of all, we're seeing that Baiju Bhatt, that's the co-founder and also us as the CEO. As the chief creative officer. Man, where does Wall Street, where does Silicon Valley get these crazy names? Chief creative officer. Baiju Bhatt owns a stake in the company worth about, that's the chief creative officer and the CEO, that's Vlad Tenev, own about $2.5 billion worth of shares in the company. That's $2.5 and $2.8 billion respectively.
Mm-hmm.
So they would still continue to command about 65% in terms of control of the company. In terms of recent revenues for Robinhood, we're seeing revenue and operating expenses are still hand in hand, where we're seeing for Q1 2020, the revenues stood at $522 million and the operating expenses stood at about $463 million. I know there's been a lot of scrutiny regarding Robinhood Markets, and we're really hoping that the company going public would really bring in a lot in terms of scrutiny, more scrutiny as well. We're actually seeing Wall Street Bets on Reddit claiming that they would keep off Robinhood's IPO. And what? I know this is most likely because of earlier on during the crazy raise about GameStop, when Robinhood actually suspended for a day or two. They sort of controlled the liquidity that was happening in GameStop. And so it's payback time, Robinhood. Yeah, payback time from the famous Reddit bros.
Yeah, I think I'll leave it to that. Oh, by the way, hopefully trading would have launched on Lisa, then it would be exciting to access Robinhood on Lisa, don't you think?
Yeah, guys, we're definitely working with regulators to just get the HISA app live, and then soon you'll be able to access some of these stocks. While you won't be able to buy Robinhood IPO through the HISA app this time around, but when we go live, you'll be able to directly access and become a shareholder of Robinhood Markets as well.
Oh, hint, I'm doing a fire podcast on how HISA will be approaching global markets next week. So in case you want a little bit of insider information, HISA trading, you know.
No, it's not insider information.
Just kidding. Not insider information. In case you want just to get
inside information.
Updates.
There's a difference between
insider and
inside information.
This is what happens when a tech and startup guy starts talking about these things. Huh? Anyway, if you want to just have some inside updates on what's happening around HISA trading, definitely watch out for an episode next week we're doing with one of our partners for global trading. I think this is all I had for today. Maybe in closing, we can look at some of the few things that happened on markets. If you're checking your HISA app with me, Felix, are you checking your HISA?
Yeah.
On desktop. on markets today, I think the top gainer according to data on HISA app was East Africa Portland Cement.
Yeah.
Which gained around 9.87%.
In terms of year-to-date return, let me just kill your hopes. In terms of year-to-date returns, East African Portland Cement has lost about 21.1% in terms of shareholder returns. The one-year returns, if you had East African Portland exactly 1 year ago, it's down 37.3%. It's actually, in terms of performance onto the exchange, right? No, I'd let Ali continue.
I think Felix will give more details on that on Markets Monday. Right, and then we also had Asamia Africa, which was up 9.52%. Currently trading at Kenyan shillings 3.45. I think this came after it moved 2,200 shares. Unga Group. Unga Group Limited was up by 9.38%, opening at 27.20 shillings, closing at 29.75. Shares traded were 100.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we
guys, once again, that just as we usually tell you, when we talk about markets, is that don't really run around being happy because of a certain stock gaining about 9 or 10%. At times, the liquidity in that stock would really be something to look into, because you're seeing stocks gaining even 10%, but then the number of shares that have traded on that stock are probably just 100 shares. And because look at it from this angle, if you look at it from yesterday, when Unga Group was up as well 0.3%, but only 100 shares were traded. If you look in keenly all through the past 1 or 2 weeks. There are certain gains, but at very, very small, with very small volumes traded. So always really figure out, look at it from a volume standpoint as well. That's why I think the NSE, whenever there's a lot of trading, they would always give guys the volume weighted average price. That's the view as a closing price for stocks within the market. So very important aspect as well.
Yeah, I think this is all we had for today. In case you have more questions, discussions, two places to do that. You can chat with us and our community directly on the HISA app. Download the HISA app on iOS and Android. Crazy updates coming in. In case you're on the HISA app, you can chat us there directly. If not, you can also talk to us and discuss with other investors on our platform, on the Investors Open Room on Telegram. Thank you so much for joining today's discussion. Anyone has a question? This would be a good time to raise your hand.
Yeah, so for the guys who are joining us for the first time, either on Telegram or on Twitter, one of the things that we usually do is we give guys a few minutes to probably ask a question or drop in a comment. It would come in handy. So let me just see if there's anybody on Telegram. On Twitter, on Telegram I don't see anybody coming in today. On Wednesday, definitely we'll talk about more about the mobile money spin-off, and we'll be inviting a lot of guys. We've always had a few guys coming in when we relate to tech, and I know Dan's will be coming in as well. Eric Jackson will be in as we talk about mobile money. So it will be a more holistic discussion next to come Wednesday during the Bulls Bears Whiskey event. So be sure to tune in during that session. I'm seeing there's no person who's really raised their hand on both platforms. So Ali, I think that's it.
Bye, guys.
All right. Bye, guys. See you guys next week.